Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
Here's Campbell handing on to Kane again. Lots of head fakes there trying to shake Demon. Threw it in front. Oh my, it rattled around and it kicked on back and it scored. We saw no light. We saw no signal. And we're not sure if they've set a signal of a goal yet, but they are celebrating at the other end of the ice. What chaos. Word has gotten to the Blackhawks what you have just seen. One of the more unusual finishes, but it's a goal. The Stanley Cup to the Chicago Blackhawks. Hit the goal, and the puck bounced out to center. Striding ahead for it is Tate. Staggering on Tate. Pushed it wide. 2 seconds and one. The Blackhawks are Stanley Cup champions. They've waited a long time for this to be at home. Slipped in front and Crawford another block. Five to go. For the third time in 6 years, the Blackhawks are Stanley Cup champions.
The episodes in life that last so many years in memory are measured in fleeting moments as they happen. Joel Quenneville celebrates with his team.
Memories for Blackhawks fans, memories they'll always have of that voice. And he is our guest now on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park. Mike, Doc Emrick, those legendary calls on NBC. If you want to tune into Twitch and see us during this conversation, you can right now at twitch.tv/Chicago670. The Score, Mike Emrick. Hello, how are you?
Daniel, what do you say?
Well, I guess it's bittersweet for those of us who've enjoyed your work for so long. You know, wishing you nothing but the best, and knowing you have worked this hard to do what you want to do. But why now? And when did you know that this was going to be it?
I guess between the second and third rounds was when the decision crystallized for me, because a lot of people that are retired told me that I would be very much aware and I would know when it was time. And I think with all that was going on with the pandemic and how loyal NBC had been to me and how loyal Eddie Olczyk and Brian Boucher had been, because I was calling games from home and they had done a great deal to make sure that I was comfortable and safe, because there were some boxes that I had to check off that other people did not. One was my birth certificate. One was my cancer past. And so I had to play it safer than most of the rest of our crew did. And they understood that. And they were very supportive of me. And then after the second round, we continued on. And it was reconfiguring all of the technical equipment that I had to the truck in Edmonton. And I think it started to cross my mind at that point. They are doing such yeoman work for me. And I then was in a conversation with Brian Boucher about Ken Dryden. And I realized that it was 50 seasons ago that I was covering games for the for a newspaper in Pittsburgh. It was exactly 50 years ago, and Ken Dryden was a rookie. And I don't know that Brian Boucher was even living then. And here I've had all of these seasons that have passed, and I'm still, thanks to NBC, I'm still health-wise okay. And it as a time in my life when my wife and I are both okay. and we have creatures that are very important to us that are okay too. So that seemed like a point when I arrived at the notion that this was time. And so that is it. That's the only story there is. It's not terribly exciting, but it is the only story that I have.
There are wonderful stories to be had in your book that is now out, Off Mic, How a Kid from Basketball Crazy Indiana Became America's NHL Voice. And being America's NHL voice is, it means that to have a relationship with a team's fandom, it's a function of that team being really good and being viable in the springtime. And that's why I think for Chicago, for people listening right now, your retirement may feel somewhat abrupt to them, because we as a hockey town didn't really get to know you until this decade. That this has been, there's been a recency here. It's like, oh, that's exciting hockey guy. That's the voice of these teams. And Taves and Kane and Keith and Seabrook are still out there in uniform. So your relationship with Chicago is still relatively new, and especially with the Eddie Olczyk factor as well, because he's taught hockey here to so many people. So you help people raise them with the game, that this is, it's been a unique and recent relationship you've had here with Chicago.
And I've been very fortunate to have that too. It's a city that I just love visiting, and some of my best memories are going to be having been there. And I think most particularly, and we did talk about this one other time, Dan, about being in Chicago on that dark and stormy night, and with tornadoes actually touching down in the area, and the Stanley Cup being delayed and getting down to United Center. And finally, the Blackhawks were going to win it. Not like in 1961 in Detroit, and not like in 2010 in Philadelphia, not like in 2013 in Boston. They were going to win it at home. And so that's why that excerpt that you played had a lot of crowd in it, because the crowd was cheering wildly, and hopefully I wasn't talking so much that the crowd could be heard. And the fact that the cup arrived a little bit late and the Blackhawks celebrated a lot more than most teams did without the cup before it did arrive was attributed to lots of chaos going on in the city and trying to get it down there from its position north of the city to arrive during the third period when it dramatically normally does. I have greatly appreciated so many of the Blackhawks fans who have greeted me so kindly during this time. And I'm sorry that the team is not what it was in those six seasons that had three championships. But hockey, just like the other sports, is on a cycle. And so the cycle does not always have you at the top. It has you rebuilding to get back there.
An ongoing theme throughout your book is about you finding joy in your work and how that comes through, and how your love of the sport and your love of broadcasting the sport then work multiplicatively in finding that way through the airwaves to the viewer, to the audience. And I was mindful of a recent book that I read and an interview we did a couple of weeks ago. A guy named Glenn Kenny wrote a book about Martin Scorsese and about his making of Goodfellas. And the ongoing theme in that book is, here is a brilliant septuagenarian and still at the peak of his powers who had a difficulty finding joy, has difficulty having fun doing what he does, compelled to do what he does, needing to do what he does, but always has struggled to be happy about it and in doing it. Why has it been so seemingly easy for you to not only to be joyful in these moments, but to express it?
Well, I think because the sport it's not a sport that everyone can play automatically. There has to be a commitment on the part of parents. There has to be a commitment on the part of a kid, boy or girl, to learn how to use unnatural extensions of their feet, skates, an unnatural extension of their arm, a stick, and then to somehow or other hone those skills to get to a puck that is loose and then generate some kind of a play with it. It is a skill that I have admired all my life because I never had it, and I admire people that do it. And the athletes are the number one thing in our sport. And I am still in awe of what people like Patrick Kane and Jonathan Toews can do, and what the former goaltender Corey Crawford could do to earn a championship for this city. That always has, it's always been a joy for me to watch people who can do that. And fortunately for me, and selfishly for me, when I informed NBC of my decision a week ago, they said, we would still like you to do some essays for us once we get into a new season. Would you be amenable to that? Well, who wouldn't want to write a love letter to a sport every once in a while? You just don't slam on the brakes and walk away from a sport that you love. And so I still get to do that. But I don't know how to describe how much, in answer to your question, how much I have enjoyed this sport. For those of you who actually see me right now, we always change these with each game. There is a Fort Wayne Comets jersey behind me, and this was the team's jersey in 1960 when I saw them play the first game. That was 60 years ago. And we usually changed to various developmental team league jerseys, either past or present. And that was a tribute to minor league teams, because if you think the NHL has had some hardships because of the pandemic, consider the teams in the minor leagues who have no television contract to speak of. They only go by sponsorships and by ticket sales. And so the public confidence has to be such that they are safe to go back in the minor league arenas, and sponsors to sponsor board advertising and program advertising, which is their lifeblood. So I am just a cheerer for hockey at all levels, including teams like the old Fort Wayne Comets here of 1960.
And I loved your descriptions of Allen County War Memorial Coliseum. My experience there in the old Continental Basketball Association, calling games between the Rockford Lightning and the Fort Wayne Fury in that building. That was a frequent trip against a divisional rival, and that place could shake when it was full. That place, we would sit way up top in that press nest up there, and that place would rattle around.
It was a hard place to call a game from, wasn't it?
Yep. Got hot up there, too. Yeah,
that's for sure. Because you're going off the back of a basketball uniform that's not always turned to you. At least with hockey, we've got sleeve numbers. But from that great distance, it's hard. And our business, isn't it, is to identify players. And it becomes very hard when the uniforms are turned from that great a distance, turned to your back. We used to always, Pat Foley and I used to always joke about United Center, because when it first opened, we were down in the stands in the first level. And it was, the game moves at just the right speed there. And it was very easy to identify players. And even though the Blackhawks jerseys are wonderful because it's white against red at home, and so it stands out really well, the visitors' jerseys are not always as easy to identify.
What, if anything, did you learn about yourself through the process of putting this book together? Did you emerge from it recognizing something new or different about yourself?
Yeah, that for so long I tried to do the perfect job, and you realize that human beings do this, not automatons. And as much as I wanted to, and Eddie will attest to this, there were times when I would slam my hand down on my roster book. It's a three-ring binder, because I misidentified a player. And I think it would probably be one of those things that you wouldn't expect. And Eddie, of course, was watching the game, and all of a sudden comes this crack, because I got a number that was a 19 and an 18 on a visiting team. I usually knew Jonathan Toews from somebody else, but it would be somebody on the visiting team, and I'd get the number wrong. And I knew I got it wrong. Now, maybe a good percentage of the audience wouldn't know, but I'd know, and it would annoy me. And out of all of those games that I've done, and maybe you can attest to this too, because you're in the same profession that I am, haven't done a perfect one yet, and now I never will. But for a long time, I wanted to, and that was really the wrong approach. I should have known better than that. So that was probably some wasted energy on my part, when really what I should have done was just relax more and just realize that, hey, it's 3 hours of talking. And what Eddie and I would always say to each other was, it's on its way to Mars. Who cares?
Last thing for you, Mike, we appreciate you taking the time today. Has any player ever come close to doing something indescribable? Has there ever been something on the ice where you momentarily were doing the unthinkable and that was searching for a word or a phrase?
Yeah, a lot of the guys now do that. When I first started in the NHL in 1980, a lot of goals were scored off the wing. You'd get a guy like Bill Barber in Philadelphia or Roger Bear in New York. I guess he was more in the 70s. They'd come down the wing and just blast one. Well, those are easy to call because they're clean goals. Now most of them are on deflections or close-in work. Sidney Crosby would do some baffling things because he would go forehand, backhand, and creep in close to the net and then roof it. A lot of guys do that now. And so you do find yourself baffled by the speed of the game from time to time where you just can't pick up every guy that handled the puck, and you don't even try to because it is television and they can see it. There was a guy in Buffalo named John Gertler who did a wonderful job of doing the Sabres for several years on television. And one night he had one of those occasions like I've had several times where the passes went so fast that he did Looney Tunes' Bugs Bunny. He said, "Avia, Avia, 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 score!" because it went so fast from one guy to another. And that pretty much typifies what all of us get handcuffed doing every once in a while.
The book is called Off Mic, How a Kid from Basketball Crazy Indiana Became America's NHL Voice, written by Mike Doc Emrick with Kevin Allen. This was a distinct pleasure of mine, and I certainly will miss hearing you. I look forward to the essays, and I wish you nothing in retirement but happiness and only the best of health.
Dan, thanks so much for your time, and thanks so much for all of the other interviews that we've done, and hopefully there'll be some in the future, too. And I will never sit at home and hear Chelsea Dagger without having a smile on my face of recollections past.
I'd look forward to that greatly. That is Mike Doc Emrick, our guest on Sports Radio 670 WSCR, The Score.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.